Let's not abuse it.
Yeah, we were this close to getting WhatsApps.
Yeah. Good afternoon and welcome to Homerun. It's the 19th of January. Did I mention teachers and nurses? You guys are very awesome and you contribute significantly to our economy.
You know, we would love to see that support manifest, you know, in a broad-based scenario tomorrow. No, I had to keep it close, but not too close.
Not too close. Yeah.
And that's far enough, you know, just to be at arm's length, you know.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, especially this time of the year and this month, not financially. I mean, the, you know, significant, you know, burdens that comes with registration, you know, for school, hostels and stuff.
I wonder how it feels like to, you know, to literally be paid for being just 1 week in, you know, in at work. But you know what? It's just my mind, you know.
You don't have teacher friends, do you? Or police officers?
Well, I'd like to know, guys, you know, do we see you guys tomorrow at the Hungry Lions and the KFCs?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's very easy to take statistics of who's a teacher and who's a, you know,
who's a just go stand at the takeaways.
Go to pizza in and you
go there, you stand at the takeaways.
Definitely.
And see. Okay.
Yeah. So, speaking now, today we're going to be talking about, more of, about energy transition, you know, the different, not the take away type of energy. This is, you know, the power, electricity, industrial scale, you know, type of energy. Now, today's discussion is going to be based on, on a forum, as, you know, called that took place in Abu Dhabi in the UAE last week. That's last week, right? Yeah. Our vice president attended that event and he also gave one interesting speech, which if you ask me, the whole speech was just firing shots. I just can't prove it. Now, here's the
true. And also the one-on-one was somehow also
firing shots.
Yeah, and I was like, ish. But it's more of, ish, no, Helmut, for you first complete your sentence.
I know.
It's nothing controversial, guys, just so that you know.
It's nothing controversial. Yeah, nothing controversial. Our vice president is actually one of the words that, one of the words that caught my attention in her speech at this Global South Utility Forum. Now, Global South Utilities, this is a resource and an energy investment, an energy infrastructure development company. And they put a lot of emphasis in energy transition and green energy. That's, their investments is heavy in that direction. And, obviously Namibia is one of those countries with a significant green energy, you know, investment. So it's not surprised that we were actually present at that discussion. Now, this is actually one very interesting discussion to have, especially one of energy transition, because there's a reason why the word transition is there.
Mm.
It's because, well, we're still in the process. Now, for a very long time, at least when we're talking about all this energy transition discussion, especially shortly after the discovery of oil wells in Namibia's offshores, like, okay, are we going to have to pick one and leave one until I actually went to the dictionary and looked up the word transition? Yeah.
Which technically means
you
leave
are in the process.
One. Yeah. Or you are in the process.
You are in the process of leaving the one. You haven't left yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in the process of leaving one.
And it doesn't include also selling electric cars for the fun of it. No. It actually means that you start adopting and selling more hybrid vehicles and
hence the hybrid even comes in because you have not gone fully yet.
And you are
headed there.
And you allow your specific economy to include various energy mixes to make energy as affordable as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, Helmut, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, mind you, just before you finish that sentence. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to look at the phrase just energy transition. But when you look at it in African context, it's probably like, hey, where are we transition? Because you've got to ask, where are you? And how do you meet up to this particular platform? But yeah, you know, just so that you finish your intro first.
I have to suppress my Ugandan presidential election thought, so I can just focus on the energy.
Oh, there's other comments also about the
landslide election. But moving on.
By switching off the internet.
I know, right?
And locking the opposition candidate up in his house.
Just when I was like, why am I not at work?
And locking up the opposition candidate in his house.
You know what? Yeah, that's
wonderful stuff. You know,
politics, we'll do with you shortly.
Politics is just not the career path in Uganda.
No.
I mean, they can just declare themselves a one-party state already.
And Namibian politicians, please let's not go that direction. Like, we're not switching off the internet during election, because that's even if nothing is going on, it's very easy to, it's too suspicious. Ah, but moving on to the energy.
Yeah, guys, don't worry. It's a Monday. We love our Mondays. Except for Helmut.
And I like Fridays. As I know that.
But you were still saying, Helmut.
Yeah. So when it comes to this discussion, it's important to come to the, to first, I think, understand the language that's being spoken here. Just energy transition. That means you are in the process of transitioning. You haven't transitioned fully. So you are not switching off the tap completely when it comes to, when it comes to fossil fuel and just go green, like instantly. I think, that's actually, now that you mentioned hybrid cars, it also, it's more like a practical application of that transition and energy mix on on hybrid cars, because they have like two modes of energy supply. They have the traditional crude oil supply, or more like that's refined, not crude, and they also have the electric component running all at the same time. So that's actually indicates that indicates the practical application of the energy transition in reality, where you're showing that someday we're going to have the electric component of energy, especially in modes of transport, to its maximum capacity, in a sense that it's running fully operational and very reliable over long distances, and it's readily available to recharge. But until we get there, we're just going to, we're going to make sure that we have two of them running all at the same time.
Here's the thing, Helmut, that I looked at also from the Sustainability Week discussion. And I understand why we only sent the vice president, even though the president was invited, because the vice president was there on behalf of the president.
Yeah.
Firstly, Namibia loves UN platforms. Sustainability Week is something run and organized by the host country, the UAE.
Yeah.
So this is a UAE-centric scenario. And remember back to our other particular dissection, I'll call it a dissection because we literally had an autopsy of that conversation of the COP of 2 years back. Was it COP 29 or COP 28?
29, that was...
was Azerbaijan, I think.
Azerbaijan, yeah.
So it was 28.
28, yeah.
The one where it was in UAE, where the scandals and the rumors about the UAE was using the COP28 as a platform to sell more oil.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're also an OPEC country. And I did not know that they're actually two OPEC bodies. OPEC
and OPEC Plus,
yeah. And specifically, they were furthering that to, sell more oil supply contracts, which obviously cites into the mass confusion, the mass geopolitical and policy direction, specifically around global trade. And if you put Trump and all his antics to one side, with Greenland and Venezuela and so on, put Trump and his noise one side. But if you start from the discussion of looking at how are each of the countries championing the just energy discussion.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what American president is there. Just look at, are they still continuing with their said policies that they had 2 years back or 3 years back? Now, Namibia is obviously, we still have the mentioned ducks in the row. It's just that in the discussion of just energy, or actually in our NDP6, we see a clear mention of nuclear energies, utilization and the potential to try and understand oil and gas. Even though we can shout from the top of our lungs here on Eagle FM that oil and gas is literally 10 years away.
Mm.
Minimum. So we're looking at 2034.
Yeah.
Which is now technically 8 years away.
Yeah.
And apparently, in the one document that I shared with you, this was done by another particular sort of like research entity, Namibia's actual just energy transition, the phase between 2020 going ahead. Our actual just energy transition is actually in by 2040. So it's 14 years from now. So,
okay,
that was just my phone falling. Don't worry, guys. So in between, we've got this weird juggling act happening. We've got Vision 2030, mm-hmm. 4 years from now.
Yeah.
We've got the potential for the first oil being pumped by 2034 and our actual just energy transition adoption, meaning completion sort of like deadline is by 2040, 4 years after, 6 years after that. Now we sit with a little bit of a dilemma. It's not a problem. It's not a problem because it's as easy as just saying, okay, guys, now you can open up the curtains or you can open up the windows or switch on the aircon. Don't worry, guys. Now we can all breathe. It's as easy as that because that's all it takes. That's what Donald Trump has been proving. And that's what all presidents prove every time when a new president is voted into office across the world. We've even seen it with our particular nation last year, when now people are trying to define this subsidized tertiary education discussion.
Mm.
So when we look at just energy transition, this was something I saw since 2022 when the Ukraine conflict kicked off, when, I asked that question to the former Minister of Mines and Energy, Minister Alwindo at State House, because we were given that platform after the former and late President Geingob had the sort of like a briefing session for the nation, and President Geingob was flanked by Minister Alwindo, Minister Shimi, after they came back from the World Economic Forum, and by the former Director General of the National Planning Commission. I asked the question specifically because they came back from World Economic Forum, and at the end of that year, that was 2023, not 2022. Yeah. And obviously it was a discussion of, okay, so, you know, now Europe and whoever is running around to solidify oil and we suddenly have these oil discoveries, what's going on? And then we got the obvious answer of, you know what, the same countries that are telling Namibia, meaning in Europe, to adopt a just energy transition are the same countries that are now running around individually signing onto contracts. More or fuel security or energy security contracts after they, you know, decided to firstly allow America to blow up,
Caracas.
No, what was the pipeline's name?
Nord Stream
to blow up Nord Stream 1, because Nord Stream 2 needed approval to be switched on.
Yeah.
Nord Stream 2, Helmut, is complete right next to Nord Stream 1. Nord Stream 2 would have increased gas and oil supply to Europe. But Nord Stream 1 was the one blown up that was active, the one that was supplying natural gas to Europe. So after Nord Stream 1's particular destruction, and obviously that discussion not being completed, we now obviously 4 years later, we now ask the question in terms of, okay, so what has Namibia done in a just energy transition discussion? Now, it is mentioned somewhere in NDP 6. I won't highlight it now because obviously you can still see the particular project still continuing. The important thing that we need to take from this has been a question of how much money has been invested so far in Namibia's just energy transition. Now, I bring this in because in one of our literature resources, it actually mentions two quantities there. And the first quantity, okay, let me just use the global term that I calculated myself. At least it looks like 280 billion Namibian dollars worth has been invested by the investors into Namibia's just energy transition. And this is everything associated around even the green hydrogen and so forth. So we obviously see that as is what the particular partners, the investor partners in associated to Namibia's various just energy transition discussions have invested in Namibia. 280 billion Namibian dollars. It's an estimate. I call it an estimate because I'll stick to that quantity as an estimate. And this is what the one literature resource highlights, because it's a French research paper that, cites and tries to measure Namibia's particular, what's the thing's name? Namibia's particular overall investment into its just energy discussion. And just energy can even include the renewable energy discussion of last Friday, whereby, our Minister of Energy, of Industries, Mines and Energy, and the Deputy Speaker of our National Assembly were invited to IRENA. And the weird thing is they almost had the same speech. Helmut. The Minister Amutse was in the ministerial forum.
Yeah.
The Deputy Speaker was in the regulators forum. Ne? Word for word, they were not the same. But how they were structured, technically the same. So as to say the same, almost the same thing. Because the Deputy Speaker had his particular speech, since it was limited to three words, was literally first, second, third, and lastly, you know, in that kind of a structure,
yeah,
each of the paragraphs. And the minister's particular speech, yes, wasn't vague, but it was all sort of like an umbrella speech just to give some sort of a, because they were asked in these particular sessions, you know, what does it look like in your country? What does it look like in your country? So
the energy transition in Namibia.
Yeah, and
investment-wise or transition is in infrastructure development.
Okay, with the IRENA platform, it was, since it was about renewable energy,
yeah,
this agency. So they were asked, you know, so what has been the adoption or the introduction or making things feasible or conducive enough for investors or whoever to participate?
Yeah.
In investing in renewable energy infrastructure in your country, and thus your country adopting renewable energy mix or renewable energy into its mix. That was what the Deputy Speaker responded to. That was what the Minister also responded to. And it then also literally coincides with the speech that the Vice President had. The speech that I shared with you.
Yeah.
The speech that I shared with you, she gave also an overarching sort of like feedback scenario regarding what Namibia has done so far. And when you look at the overarching sort of like summaries, because these speeches technically are like summaries that they gave about Namibia, at the heart of it, they predominantly speak about green hydrogen. Hence the reason when you think about Namibia's just energy transition, it seems like our renewable energy discussion, meaning the installation of solar panels by the independent power producers.
Yeah.
And remember that report that we did last year about the one about the record supply to Africa by China of solar panels.
Yeah.
It technically seems that that discussion is divorced from the investment into green hydrogen production. So now we sit with a detached picture, Helmut. A picture of one saying, okay, so we've had now three high-ranking government officials or high-ranking, let's just call them officials of Namibia, representing at Namibia at two international platforms. And the predominant picture that they go report to the world about is green hydrogen.
Green hydrogen.
Energy
transition, if it's about energy transition, I would actually think the solar panel mass export, more like mass import, would actually play a significant role because it's also green energy.
Exactly. And that was the particular conversation.
But it's not factored into a part of what Namibia is doing in its energy transition.
Exactly. And since Namibia is already exporting electricity,
yeah,
and we, at the end of last year, 2025, the ECB obviously had the particular public engagement regarding NamPower's proposal to be an aggregator through a specific privately run power station into the SADC power pool from the independent power producers. And the assumption you can run with is that most of the independent power producers are solar panel farms.
Yeah.
So they are farming solar power to sell into the SADC power pool at a US dollar rate. Now, with that particular assumption, you would think, wow, so Namibia is doing good on one side. That means there's private investment, specifically private investor investment into one of our energy mix discussions. So then you would think, okay, so that should be the strongest point that we are promoting to the world.
It should also count as what we are, you know, our, what we are practicing in our energy transition discussions. Yeah.
Exactly. But you would think it would be the predominant talking point. You would assume that, Helmut, because it's the easiest one to invest in, it's the easiest one to install, the easiest one to get up and run, and the easiest one for, you know, the ECB, NamPower,
local content policy,
everyone to participate. I mean, you can go and buy, you can buy, go buy the solar panels at local hardware shops, stores. So your local content starts there.
Yeah.
Local content actually starts with the registration of your entity at BIPA even.
Yeah.
So you see all this, but all this sort of like touching points happening. You source the, so the photovoltaic or the solar power panels from the, cause what the guy explained from Rayon, the association, is that the solar panels are now sold as kits.
Like in bulk.
Yeah, it's a kit. It's the panel with the sort of like the storage unit. They're sold in kits.
Oh yeah, because a solar that's DC. So for you to use it, you must convert it to AC. So you need converters.
That too. So from that particular conversation, so if you're talking about a solar power farm, you know, for you to mass harvest sunlight, you're obviously looking at a industrial scale kind of an application, or whether it be small or a medium sized installation that this particular venture, you're obviously looking at harvesting as much power so that you can sell as much power
as possible,
so that you can have maximum returns on what you just built or constructed. Now, a small installation would be something on the roof of a company's building, right? Because it's meant for that company's needs.
Yeah.
It's not meant for to be somehow resold back into NamPower's particular grid. No, it's something you have on your house.
Just where, for domestic use.
You know, exactly.
Not going commercial yet.
That means you're off the grid, or that building owned by that company is partially off the grid, meaning on the days, let's say, if there's extended cloud cover. No, not outages, because we haven't experienced, you know, the load shedding like South Africa.
We're very good customers.
We're very super good. Super good. You know, we ensure that we get the best service ever.
Yeah.
So when we look at that particular situation on the ground, when you look at that situation on the ground, the facts on the ground, you realize, Helmut, that we've actually been practicing just energy transition before the green hydrogen program started functioning.
Yeah.
The green hydrogen program started during COVID 2020.
You know, now that you point out, what was covered in, in all the speeches that are, very instrumental into, putting Namibia out there in terms of what Namibia is doing in terms of its contribution to call it a climate, you know, climate change mitigation strategies, energy transition, and Paris agreements and stuff.
Mm.
You'd actually, you know, it's very reasonable to think that you'd emphasize what is happening on a local level.
Yeah.
And that would speak more to the mass importation of solar panels.
Exactly.
That would also factor in. Now, the question that you can easily ask yourself from the fact that it was not even mentioned is that, is it possible? I would say we don't have the information, but we talked about the mass importation of solar panels, not just in Namibia, but that was the entire, the whole African continent.
Mm.
So if it's not emphasized, is it possible we don't have enough information of how much of it is going on, and we have not gathered this information?
What I would suspect, Helmut, if I look at the speech writing, of what the three representatives went and said, that being the vice president, the minister, and the deputy speaker. It seems like they were keeping, they were given sort of like the basics.
Specific, like specifics, the basics of what's taking place.
Yeah, in, specifics like would have been.
Big projects that's associated with green, with energy transition.
Or sort of like simplifying for the person what's currently, at, currently happening, what was, what, where are we now, and what should happen. So the specifics of the matter would have been quantities, like money, like size, like how many kilowatts, terawatts, gigawatts, you name it, or megawatts would have been the various projects or the installations of said projects. So those would have been the specifics of the matter. And this is also something I realized in the past 4 years specifically of Namibia's now particular prominence in the world of the of renewable energy, in the renewable energy bracket of things, has been that whoever writes our, the speeches for our people, it's not that I'm saying that, the person is doing a bad job. It's it's just that we need a little bit more specifics of things. Cause you go here, the person goes, represents Namibia where you look at the speech that's given or the, that which is shared. I used to love, the previous, Minister of Agriculture speeches and, I'm now liking Minister Sankwasa's speeches because I saw that today. And specifically, they give you exact details. You look for the details.
You know, now that you pointed out more like the significance of more like quantity in terms of energy production in this specific project that were emphasized.
Or you give evidence of, of what is happening.
Yeah. And the second thing is the investment that comes in terms of because if you look at the investments in monetarily that's going in projects like the green hydrogen, these are massive investments that dwarfs the solar importation of in the mass solar importations basically combined per year. That takes us to the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week. Where in a ministerial session that was held as part of that forum, more emphasis was put on government's visions and policies into on converting government's visions and policies into bankable and executable projects. So we are talking more about money here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which brings you back.
Which is more, I mean, it's putting more emphasis on, we're just going to focus on this and this and these projects because after all, chances are very high. Everyone, there's a lot of information for everyone to reference when we talk about green hydrogen than Helmut starting a solar farm somewhere.
But here's the thing, Helmut. Why is Helmut starting the solar farm not being referenced by a national leader at a national platform? Whether Helmut owns the thing privately or Helmut is a joint venture on a community land level or whatever, why isn't it sort of like made mention of?
Pardon me. Now, I think that's the million-dollar question here, especially for the three, government representatives.
I mean, are they afraid? One question, obviously, that is just a rhetorical question. Are they afraid of promoting the private sector interests?
Give a point of correction. Not afraid. I would go with, are they embarrassed to promote the small guys?
Oh.
Look, that's what... That's all I see.
Look, the green hydrogen guys are not small.
That's why I'm saying, that's why they were emphasized than...
Because that was government to government speaking on behalf of another government's private sector.
Yeah.
It's Miss Germany's private sector and the EU's private sector that's investing in Namibia. So, since the discussion is government to government representing another country's private sector... The conversation that you've got to ask yourself is, Helmut, okay, so we are happy to mention in three speeches. If you count the amount of lines, the space given to green hydrogen, versus the space given to renewable energy, overall renewable energy, which could even be you plugging in a small, you know, water turbine somewhere in your village pond.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got your little brother standing that side, you know, sort of like pushing the water to create waves, just to have a little bit of a, what do they call that? That science, those little science project situations. Even if your little brother's standing that side of the pond and you're standing that side with a turbine, you know, with a makeshift homemade turbine, the discussion would be, why are we not collectively speaking about stats to literally go and boast to the world? Because when that Albanian president 2 years back at COP 29, 2024, when you and I dissected his particular discussion in his speech, homeboy showed up with facts, Helmut. He came and said literally, my country has got a lot of standing water. What did we do? We went and positioned hydroelectric turbines in each of those standing bodies of water, fresh water, so that we can utilize what we've got in abundance. We don't have natural resources, but we converted a natural resource, which is a natural phenomena, or not phenomena. Which,
a lot of surface water, you know, we're going to use that as, you know, that's our strong suit.
Yeah. And what are they doing? Advantage. They're exporting electricity to the rest of Europe. Helmut, whether it's a privately owned power station or a government owned power station, it's a power station in your country. Why are we afraid of boasting about our own private sector's endeavors? It's beyond me. I don't know what's going on. Like, it's like you said, are we afraid of promoting the small guy in the economy?
Well, from the look of things, yep.
Because the small guy will hire more people. When work becomes more investment is attracted. When the international investors see, oh, because for you to come into Namibia, you must anyway come and establish a joint venture, or you must anyway come and establish a localization element of your international business. So, which actually speaks to JV. So anyway, if you wish to make money in Namibia, you'll anyway have to talk to the small guy in the economy, which is the private sector.
Yeah.
So once again, why are we showing up with vague speeches? Vague speeches. I'll leave it there, because it's also for our listeners, you know, with, what do they call that thing? Critical thinking comes after that, but the other one, critical listening, since we're only utilizing one.
Okay, there were quite a few energy entities at this event. You're looking at I'm looking at Masta, or I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, which is also a UAE based energy powerhouse. And you have the global energy utility. It's also, you know, emphasis is, and you know, it's also emphasis in terms of investment is also energy, but you know, especially renewable energy. So, seeing that it's an energy event, that's not surprising, but it doesn't really, like you pointed out, it doesn't really answer the question of, emphasizing green hydrogen project is not the problem here. It's the fact that the small guys, you're looking at the size of investments here.
Mm-hmm.
Those private entities that have been ordering on large scale solar panels from countries like China to sort of like try to participate in this green energy transition and also an overall in the Namibian economy. They're not emphasized in a discussion where they are supposed to be prioritized, because for one, they are local. You can see there's a lot of participation going on. And also the technical skills that's required by a lot of locals to participate in this, you know, in this branch, if you can call it that, of energy transition, it's much easier for one to participate into connecting, you know, positive and negative, you know, cables. And there may be the most complicated part of equipment. You have an inverter, maybe a transformer. But if you compare the level of complexity and skills required for one to participate in green hydrogen, it's light years apart.
Yes, it is.
Now, you'd actually think, yes, they would have sang a lot of the solar exporting guys. Solar importing guys.
I mean, Helmut, here's one of the things. If we break up the discussions, and I'm referencing in terms of the 2023 interview I had with one of Namibia's astrophysicists, but it's actually a nuclear physicist. He works for the government, that being Dr. Titus. And he was, you know, back in Namibia last year, specifically regarding the planned event for end of this year of 2026 that's going to happen in October, November. It's an event based upon a mock test. If Namibia wants to be wants to have a nuclear reactor, how does Namibia respond to a potential, you know, a nuclear accident?
Yeah.
That's the mock test at the end of the year. Now.
Oh yeah, that's one of those biggest. That's
it's that CBT something. CBT something that was announced last year.
Yeah, they conduct them, and actually, I think we are somewhat.
And they
would really like it to host one of those.
Yeah, because it's supposedly, since Namibia is a signatory to that treaty, it's the, it's like a precursor event. It's a precursor event in terms of how Namibia can learn from the various nuclear experts that they will bring. Yeah. So this will be, the environmental scientists, the nuclear scientists themselves, the medical scientists associated to a potential accident or of any nature. And they have to do all these tests and all these particular exercises. It's like drills.
Drills. Simulation.
It's more like simulation exercises that will be conducted. That's what I read from the platform itself. This international organization, which is based right next to the IAEA. So we convinced the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is the UN agency, which is the UN agency that reports directly to the Security Council. But the CBT something, that's the other guy that will come and do the testing. That's the first treaty that was signed after 1945 when the UN was established. They're the guys that report to the rest of the UN.
So the IAEA goes straight to the Security Council.
Yeah, which
so
is all
the rest of you goes through the General Assembly.
Yeah,
see you at the top.
Yeah, all those other particulars, sort of like multi-stakeholder engagement aspects. But the IAEA is also specifically the guy that, they're the guys that you've got to convince. That you're doing this for safety, for humanitarian, for civilian purposes, because even though Mariano Grossi probably might be in the running at the end of this year for what's his name's position, Guterres' position.
Oh, no, that one I didn't see coming.
You know, you heard about it before. Remember?
Guterres' position coming.
Attention, residents of Namibia's communal areas. This is a crucial announcement from the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Please listen carefully and share this message with your family members, neighbors and friends. Stop the practice of buying or selling communal land. Why? Because communal land in Namibia is state land and cannot be sold in any manner. Engaging in any transactions related to its sale or purchase is strictly illegal. The Communal Land Reform Act, Act No. 5 of 2002, explicitly prohibits such activities. Consequences of illegal land transactions. Legal penalties. Violators may face fines and imprisonment. Community harmony disruption. Selling or buying communal land can lead to land disputes and tensions within our communities. What you need to know. Communal land belongs to all of us. It is a shared resource that should benefit everyone. preserve our heritage. By respecting communal land, we honor our cultural legacy and protect our environment. Report illegal activities. If you suspect any illegal land transactions, please report them to the Traditional Authority, Communal Land Board, or the Ministry Office nearest to your area. Let's work together to safeguard our communal land resources for future generations. The Ministry will not be liable for any loss of land resources as a result of the illegal sale of communal land. Remember, communal land is precious. Let's keep it safe and secure for all. Thank you for your cooperation. The radio message is produced with financial support from the Government of the Republic of Namibia and the Federal Republic of Germany through the German Development Bank, KfW. For more information, please contact the ministry office nearest to your area or the Public Relations Office of the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform at the following telephone number, 061-208-7604. All official correspondence must be addressed to the Executive Director.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. 17 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And yes, it's a Monday. It's a Monday. And it's a little, I don't want to say cool here in the capital because, well, there's aircon here. I don't know what's going on outside. Now.
We can see, Helmut. It's cloudy.
Oh, yeah. It is cloudy.
Yeah.
Weather-wise. Like temperature, yeah.
And don't worry, teachers and police officers, don't worry. We and have you in our hearts.
If you live in Komasdang, not that type of temperature. You know,
what?
A different type of temperature.
What? What temperatures?
There's a groove temperature in Komasdang.
Ah, no. No, Helmut. This can't be the return you make on a Monday.
Yeah, we're not talking about that temperature. We're talking about, you know, the temperature on a thermometer. But before we continue, let's take a live read. The University of Namibia informs students that online hostel registration for 2026 opened on the 12th of January and will run until 27 February 2026. Only students who applied for a residence and received official placement confirmation may register online. Access to hostel will not be granted without proof of residence registration. Students placed on a waiting list may be considered if space become available. For assistance, students are advised to contact their respective residence office. Moving on. So, the big question here, energy transition. Congratulations for sort of like representing Namibia in pointing out what we are doing in this energy transition discussion, climate change. After all, we just, the president just came back from COP30. So energy transition, very important. And energy investments also, I get it. Energy investments, now when it comes to energy transition, it's much easier to be caught up in focusing in large projects because of the investments that comes with them.
Yeah.
And actually, when you look at countries like Namibia, we have a lot of headaches cut out for us. One that we don't value, we don't appreciate. Let me go with appreciate. We don't appreciate much. Is the political stability we have. Now, because if you go back to the 9th of January, when Donald Trump met with oil executives to try and, convince them to invest in Venezuela.
Do you think it was convincing or do you think he was trying to fleece it? Because he was trying to sell it to them.
Trying to sell it to them, which I thought was
it's the worst idea.
That's the dumbest idea coming from a businessman. The worst idea coming from a politician. the dumbest idea coming from a businessman and a politician. Last year, in January, during the energy summit of the future.
Mm.
The future of energy security summit of the future back in January. One thing that was pointed out by the International Energy Agency is Fatih Birol was that, he listed a number of things that is required for you to convince any private any investor to invest in energy infrastructure. Because energy infrastructures, one, they're insanely expensive. Two, they take years to build. That means the return on investment is going to take even longer to accrue.
Mm.
Now, so then he goes on to list that. So the first thing that you need is diversify your investment. That's one. Don't put your, his exact words were, don't put your eggs in one basket. Two, and make sure that you have the right legislation in place that speaks to political stability. Because no one is going to pour billions of dollars in a country that can go up in flames at any time. That's Venezuela right now.
True. even though the vice president is now in the office, the downside still is the precariousness regarding. Oh, did you hear she had to meet the head of CIA who was responsible for the mission that literally got her boss arrested? Huh?
Now
it's like the family of a kidnapped victim.
Has to negotiate
with the kidnapper, the representative of a kidnapper, who sits with the family relative.
Look, one thing that was pointed out in a lot of things that the CEO of ExxonMobil, Darren Woods, pointed out was that on a list of things that we look at before investing in, before going to invest in a country, is that we must be friends with the people, and right now that cannot be said about the American and Venezuelan people. Not much.
No, we can't.
Yeah. So, I'm not a businessman, but I'm listening to Fatih Birol and going like, this man has a point. This guy you call president here is high on something I wouldn't recommend to anyone.
We don't know if it's oxygen.
Definitely not oxygen.
No, we don't know if it's oxygen.
Maybe that oxygen is concentrated somewhere at Mar-a-Lago. A little too toxic. But
it's probably the golf that he plays.
Yeah.
It's probably advanced golf. Advanced Tiger Woods training.
I have a few examples, but they would get us fired. Now, 24 minutes into home run. Moving on. So, now, if you can just come back to the energy transition discussion of today, there are a lot of things that the vice president pointed out in her speech, but the first one is where she sort of like she said a lot of things in one paragraph, which is energy transition was in that paragraph, and also. Yes, an energy investment, especially from developed to developing countries.
Yeah.
All in that one paragraph. And and also the partnership between the countries that are doing the investing and the countries that are being the recipients of these investments. You have all, because you want this equal partnership going on, because we have, especially with a lot of Western countries, we started off on a wrong foot.
Yeah.
Now, as part of the Vice President Lucia Vetboy's speech, she says sustainability is the only viable pathway to shared prosperity and a long-term sustainability. First of all, equal partnership, shared. So there's a type of partnership going on here. Now, long-term stability. The thing is, we don't want to start something today and then tomorrow is up in flames. If you are going to build something, you want to put energy in it so that you are building something that you will hand over to the coming generations.
Mm.
Yeah. Then she goes on to say that meeting the scales of today's challenges demands global solidarity, accessible innovative financing, your investments, accelerated technology transfer. Oh, I have a nice, very awesome that technology transfer. Yeah. I'll come back to that technology transfer. Accelerated technology transfer and authentic partnership. Keyword, authentic partnership. Now, when I read that part, I couldn't help but go like...
That sounds green hydrogen, front and center. All three of them.
Authentic partnership amongst governments.
Yeah.
Private sector, academia, and development partners.
So we spoke about remember the youth in green hydrogen?
Yeah.
Remember the guy that explained, the two guys, the one that explained the upskilling of vocationally trained Namibians, young Namibians.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was the guy that did engineering that had the additional skilling up for working in green hydrogen overall.
Yeah.
So
the one who did the upskilling in Germany.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Remember the guy that said Namibia doesn't produce any wind turbine technicians.
Yeah.
However, the best would be to convert an engineer to a wind turbine technician, but we're supposed to train wind turbine technicians for the products that we manufacture, for this hardware that is being manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of last year, Namibia went on this endeavor of converting its vocational training centers to colleges. Literally, Hamo.
What's our obsession with academia?
No. What you don't understand is, it's literally the words, if you remember the words of the VTC guy,
yeah,
the vocationally trained guy,
yeah,
where he said they had to go and be upskilled in Germany so that they can go from five, ending at five or six, and thus being able to achieve
the qualifications, yeah,
the gradings of six, seven, and eight.
Yeah.
Which would allow them to work and be able to be paid more, but to work on these particular projects associated to green hydrogen. That's what they had to do. They had to convert, just on paper,
yeah,
from being a training center to now being a training college.
Training college. But still, the emphasis of that institution is more practical than it is theoretical.
Yes, because now it has to, the whoever is being trained there,
yeah,
has to now be able to work in this highly skilled,
okay, now, highly now that, technical, now that makes sense,
green hydrogen sector, which once again says those three sentences that you mentioned, or that one line with its commas, because it had commas in
a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one line highlighted specifically government-to-government relationship between Namibia and Germany.
Yeah.
Government-to-government relationship between Namibia and Germany on education, on higher education. Government-to-government relationship of Namibia and Germany on the investor financing into this project. Government-to-government relationship, Namibia and Germany, on specifically the, you know, where the product will be shipped off to, because we know the product is meant for Europe.
Yeah.
Government-to-government relationship, Namibia and Germany, specifically on the aspects of, who's going to train Namibia's local population to work on this project or projects.
Plural.
And we still have to build a third phase there in Kunene.
That's going to take forever, man.
No, it's not going to take forever. I mean, if we've seen the concerted effort being done, what concerted effort looks like. The only thing I'm worried about is the conversation that I had back on Friday, and obviously before you came back, Hamid, is if you go and look for renewable energy legislation, like laws, we've got this disjointed picture. We need to update our overall energy laws, meaning the Energy Act,
mm-hmm,
which includes the Petroleum Act, probably, which we have to develop a clear law regarding the aspect of green hydrogen.
That's going to spill into all regulations energy.
Because here's the weird thing, Helmut. I don't know, and I am frustrated into year two, of what kind of politicians are we voting for? I'm not talking about those, the politicians that are now president and ministers. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the other politicians that are supposed to go and debate in the National Assembly.
Now we're in the legislative branch.
Exactly. Yeah. In terms of the aspect of lawmaking, they go and debate about land, but it's about agricultural land, not talking about land meant for housing, trying to sort out the housing issue.
Yeah.
They don't complete the data protection legislation debate. They don't complete the cybersecurity debate. They didn't even see those two bills, for that matter. They didn't entertain them. They don't know what the small claims court discussions are that the previous Minister of Justice, Minister Dawsa, brought in. They don't understand the aspect specifically about all this disjointed laws that we have. Helmut, they tried debating on Decentralization Act. The conversation we had last year when we were both surprised.
Decentralized authorities.
When we were both surprised that we had an act that was dormant since 2000 for 24, 26, 25 years. I interviewed the two ladies, the elections observers from the Namibia Institute for Democracy, and they were surprised when I informed them about the Decentralization Act. They were like, "What, Dwight? We had such an act?" And that was before the interview.
Yeah.
So the point I'm making is, so many things are, so we've got so many moving parts happening in just the energy.
All at the same time.
Just in the energy production realm. Yeah. That somehow one of these lawmakers, whether you are a ruling party or whether you are opposition party, someone has to get up in the National Assembly and ask the question, guys, why have we not seen a bill or a suggestion to a bill or a suggestion to a debate regarding Namibia's largest economic development in our economy?
Okay, so the whole time we are talking about on a SADC level about implementing AI into sort of like trying to focus on right on time climate change climate change induced problems like your flooding, for example.
Mm.
We want to implement, we want to apply, they had that discussion on a static level last year. They want to use AI in that department. And we also want to use AI in terms of, to sort of like streamline the policy making process because it's very, it's a very complicated and a very long one.
Yeah.
Also that discussion I said on a static level last year. Last year had a discussion about, the assessment of Namibia's AI adoption readiness. And what was one of the giant stumbling block in that road? Our legislations when it comes to regulating everything technology is cybersecurity, access to information, we're still having a lot of question marks.
And the energy sector is all about technology.
You want someone to come from somewhere with billions and billions of their dollars to invest in a sector that you have not yet made clear how you're going to regulate it.
Exactly.
That's a little too much to ask for.
No, it's not to ask. It's not too much to ask for, Helmut, because they obviously see a benefit. Remember, if someone comes to you with the money,
yeah,
with the skills, then somehow they already got, firstly, the money's already insured there back in their country where they come from.
Yeah.
Secondly, they obviously show up with a clear sort of like a de-risking that happened in their country. It didn't even happen in Namibia. And they obviously know that their ducks are in a row and they know that the bet will pay off. If they place their bet in Namibia, they know the bet will pay off. The question is just, are we wake up enough to see the game that is being played?
So that means it's it's much easier to be taken advantage of if you don't have everything clear cut in terms of how you're going to regulate a certain industry.
Exactly. So now we see in three speeches that Green hydrogen is promoted a lot more because I don't know who the speechwriters are for the vice president, for Minister Amutse, and for Deputy Speaker Katamelo. Is primarily green hydrogen is mentioned straightforward by its industry name, green hydrogen. The downside is, Helmut, we show up to another government's platform, for example, the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week is something run by the government of the United Arab Emirates. It's their initiative. And we show up there and we speak about green hydrogen. But the United Arab Emirates is an oil producing country.
And then they're like one of our biggest investors in our local oil industry.
True. Alongside the Qataris.
Yeah.
Who's also an oil producing nation, who's also, and both of them also run exploratory financing, green financing. Let's call it green financing.
Green financing, yeah.
Because when you look up Masdar, which is the sponsor of that Sustainability Week report that I found on the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week report, website, Masdar is a renewable energy company owned by three state-owned companies of the UAE. One is a investment company. One is the National Energy, the National UAE Energy Company. And the other one is the petroleum company or the petroleum energy company of the UAE. So three government entities own another government entity. Obviously, it's a kingdom, just so that you guys know.
Yeah.
But here's the downside of what happens, of what is happening in the UAE or in the Middle East specifically. So when we're looking at the trickle-down benefits that everyone can prove trickle-down economics does not work.
Boy, I hate that word.
Those three kingdoms, those three Arabic kingdoms.
Yeah.
The UAE, Kuwait, Oman and Qatar, four Arabic kingdoms, they have a basic income grant, a universal basic income grant. Do you know why, Helmut?
Yeah.
Our vice president, our minister of energy and our deputy speaker went to Abu Dhabi and spoke about employment creation. But we went to countries who have a labor issue. Those three countries, Hamoud.
They're basically importing workers.
First strong point.
Yeah.
But the question you have to ask yourself is, why are you importing workers?
Because the locals are, I don't know, so comfortable they don't have to work.
Why are you using the word comfortable? Do you know what the one guy from the UAE explained?
What is it?
Or was it from Kuwait? He literally said, one of those high-ranking officials in the government, is that the locals don't want to do the work.
They don't want to work.
How would?
Look, in any developed countries, a lot of, the more a country develops, the more people that are from that country don't want to do what they call menial labor.
It's not that it's menial. It actually pays a lot of money if you convert it into the Namibian dollar context.
Mm.
They don't want to work.
Okay, one question here. Who would if there was an option?
Helmut.
Sorry, boss. Just trying to make a point here.
I know if there was an option. But here's the option. If you are sitting with this resource, let's say you're sitting with this resource. This resource makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the livelihoods or the lifestyle of the citizens in that country is not sophisticated stuff. It's just basic things like having food. Education is subsidized. Because I bet you, if you are a Kuwaiti, if you're a Kuwaiti citizen, a Kuwaiti national, it's free education, free healthcare, free university.
Very strong passport.
Very strong passport because obviously they've got one of the strongest or strictest immigration rules.
Strong currency. I mean, they have it all.
Meaning you can't become a citizen of their country easily. Much of the Asian nations from the Middle East to the Far East, you know, it's very difficult to become a citizen of their country if you're from other parts of the world. But when you look at the benefits that the actual citizen gets, a real citizen gets, it's like a basic income, a UBI, a universal basic income, a income for every child born. Meaning the parents get like, meaning another particular incentive from the government for every child that is born a citizen of their country. Then they've already tarred their roads. Then you are already guaranteed some sort of a job. You don't even have to apply. You just have to walk up and demand a job in those countries. Whereas if you come to Namibia, the question has been, how do you get a job? Even though you are being promised jobs, the question is still, how are you getting a job?
Before you get to that, how do you get a job? You know, when you go to most private companies, at the entrance, you have, they don't care if you speak Oshwamba, they just put Kapena Ilonga there. I don't even, someone should translate that. It's not
Hindenburg.
Really, someone should translate because, look,
no work here.
Look, look, I'm not a Shwambo speaking person, but I know that most of those guys will be like, "I ain't Kapena Ilonga, but dude, I'm from Kabango." That's when they'll be like, "Oh, we may have one for you, but you know, it's night. It's at night."
Yeah.
Like, hey, that's stereotypical. But anyway,
Helmut, it's your first day back.
I'm just cooking my own people.
It's your first day. You don't want to be beaten up at the gate, please.
Yeah.
So yeah, so, I mean, when we look at these particular pictures, it makes things tricky because, for some reason, these three speeches have gone, resonated with each other as if they were working in tandem. And these three speeches, all three of them cite only one part of the renewable energy, platform in the country. Now, if we had to look at whether or not renewable energy actually sort of like generates the promise of jobs as a whole, renewable energy, obviously you have to put nuclear energy one side because it is not considered renewable energy. But if you
still don't get that part.
Oh, because you still have to go and mine the resource.
Solar voltaic, you're mining every resource you're using to make that solar panel. I still don't get the difference.
True, but the one with nuclear is that you can find a way even to safely utilize even nuclear waste for energy production. That's where the small modular reactors come in.
Yeah.
Because small modular reactors, they've discovered, are suitable for using or consuming the nuclear waste from a fully fledged nuclear reactor power
like,
station.
Like what you'd consider used up nuclear fuel cells in
from the
traditional large scale nuclear power plant.
From the, is it the fusion or the, no, from the fission react, no? From, which one is the old technology? It's fusion.
Yeah, fusion.
Yeah, the new one is fission.
Fission, isn't that the Kaboom one?
Fission is the one that they're building in southern France. The new nuclear reactor technology.
The one that's, so I'm assuming that one is advanced or more like improved in the sense that it's most likely to go Chernobyl.
No, not to go Chernobyl.
It's less likely to go Chernobyl, I mean.
Yes, but you had most of two ways of producing nuclear energy, fusion and fission.
Yeah.
Now, the one was considered the unstable one that you cited.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just get confused if it's the fusion or fission because they both had been proven through research that they can provide optimum levels of energy generation.
Mm-hmm.
But the templates of nuclear power stations throughout history have been based only on the one. But fission is now the sort of like the comeback king, supposedly, under nuclear energy production. Hence the reason where they've now developed the technology, developed the hardware, developed the construction processes and all that to literally utilize fission. And the thing with fission, Helmut, it's almost like the production will be endless.
If you look at where it's already applied, nuclear energy is already applied in submarines. Those things are fueled like, it's going to run for like 20 years.
The thing runs non-stop around the world.
For 20 years.
The only reason why they stop is when the sailors have to go and restock on food.
Yeah.
And have to see land.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's another part. When they have to, take, for example, if there's, gets to a point where they have to, where the fuel rods, the fuel cells are depleted and they have to replace them.
But that must count as a regular servicing.
Yeah, going to take about, I don't know, like,
They call it a maintenance.
It takes about, 3, if not 5 years.
For that to be done for the submarine.
Yeah.
But how much, a submarine doesn't produce energy for, your country. So leave the nuclear sub situation.
I'm saying the reliability of nuclear energy is already, it's already visible in submarines.
Yes. No, it is. You are right. Because the downside here is, when we're obviously looking at the particular goals that have been highlighting now in the past week. Oh, our international relations minister was in Russia last week.
Oh yeah, I saw those pictures.
And
I saw the handshakes and the smiles, blah, blah, blah.
And, okay, some of the conversations on the one WhatsApp group that I'm part of, which is a bunch of journalists, was the one journalist was citing. Okay, so now, okay, they used someone else's platform on YouTube to sort of like showcase something. And then I say, yeah, Russia wants our uranium, which is not true, which is not factual.
Russia has uranium.
Russia is the world's largest uranium producer. We just don't. They are not counted.
That's like me saying Bill Gates wants my money.
No, that's like you saying what can I use? China wants all Namibia's rice.
Seriously.
And Namibia doesn't produce rice. Namibia doesn't produce rice.
Hey, Karimbeza, bro.
Okay. And how big is that rice production, Hamut? Which is literally the Russia uranium to Namibia uranium production. How much is Kalimbeza's rice production?
Maybe that rice has some kind of divine nutrition. I'm not gonna make
you really had that. To go with divine nutrition. Okay. So, still staying on the measurements or the scale of production.
Yeah.
So the Russians had stockpiled all the uranium. They're literally just wheeling and dealing, selling uranium across the world. So, some of the news reports coming out about other international entities talking about this engagement that took place last week had been a discussion of, now it seems like Russia wants Namibian uranium. No, the country that wants Namibian uranium is China, because they own 3 mines, nuclear uranium mines in Namibia.
Yeah.
So, firstly, the facts are distorted. Secondly, it's primarily because we as Namibia went and said in our NDB6 that you and I highlighted last year that we want to utilize nuclear energy. So now, this is where things get interesting.
Yeah.
So, our Minister of International Relations went and met with her counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. They were smiling with each other, shaking hands and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Sergei says directly, expressly, let me use the legal terms. Sergei expressly makes it known that Russia wishes to help Namibia with its nuclear ambitions. Now, you can obviously see the timeline, Helmut. End of this year, 2026, there's that whole mock exercise simulation discussion.
Yeah.
Our Minister of International Relations was in Russia last week, meeting her counterpart. And literally after that, the new Namibian ambassador to Moscow or to Russia presented her credentials over the weekend to the Russian president, Senor Putin. And I just don't know the Russian version of Mr. or Sir.
No.
And you're the one, you're the one that went for Russian.
They just go with a name.
Oh, with a name.
Yeah.
Okay. So presented her credentials to Senor Putin. And yeah, so we're obviously seeing another development strand happening in that avenue for possible nuclear energy utilization in Namibia.
Yeah.
So it's happening in that strand. Green hydrogen is in the strand. Other renewable energy developments are in one strand. So you're looking at three very connected but unconnected silos
of energy investments.
Energy production,
yeah.
And resources. And investments into each of the sectors. Now, here's the thing, Hamoud. What is being sort of like kept on the hush? It's oil exploration.
Yeah.
I say on the hush being that obviously any because of the debacle of last year, obviously with the removed minister of Industries, Mines and Energy.
Yeah.
The statement was pretty clear. But I thought the statement was super clear from 21 March last year, 2025. Being that all oil discussions and oil exploration discussions have to go through the presidency's office. I thought that was crystal clear. I really thought that was crystal clear. Meaning we obviously have to see, okay, will there be new talks, new situations, new engagements, literally between head of state and head of state regarding further oil exploration in Namibia? We don't know. The statement was pretty clear last year, but yeah, we'll still see in this 2026, regarding any further developments. Now, you said then the second scenario regarding the Kudu gas. To me, Kudu gas,
elephant in the room,
which is an elephant, an ignored elephant in the room, seemed like the most plausible, possibly, right next to the solar panel discussion.
Yeah.
Renewable solar power production that is popping up across Namibia. I thought the affordability component of gas to power would have solved much of the energy demand issues in the country that we would have had. We could have had a rapid or rampant rural electrification program running wild in the country. It could have connected so many lights. Then anyone who's an independent power producer producing energy from sunlight could have just exported the electricity into the rest of the grid, i.e. into the rest of the SADC power pool. And I'm still sitting with this particular conundrum. What's the holdup? If Namibia wanted to achieve electrical independence, at independence,
mm-hmm.
the Kudu gas field would have been the go-to thing.
It should have been the priority.
But it's been this ignored resource for 35 years, for 36 years now, 2026, for 26 years now, 36 years now. The biggest talking point is we're sitting here, we show up at sustainability platforms globally, we go promote one project, ignoring the plethora. Hamoud, do you know how spoiled for choice we are? With everything I just mentioned to you,
mm-hmm.
we are spoiled for so much choice. We could have generated, since the politicians in Namibia love talking about job creation, they could have generated so many jobs in all five of these strands. And you can ignore oil because we would not have then need oil. Gas to power, solar, the nuclear energy avenue, the green hydrogen avenue, all of these things together.
I'd actually still argue that, you'll need oil for you to have a Range Rover with an oil N1 license plate. But the nuclear discussion...
Hamoud, Look, no one wants on their number plate gas one, eh?
That's the worst license plate you can.
I know. No one wants a number plate that says gas.
Okay, we've got to be serious.
Yeah.
Gas one.
I mean, look, I know it's a pun, but it goes into various directions of not so good thoughts, but yeah.
No, not so good thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, for me, the vice president's speech alone emphasizes, more than just, okay, more like, tries to touch all avenues of the energy transition discussion. Because, if you look at the, climate change issues, issues that are caused by climate change, like flooding and, flooding and droughts, for example, they are not confined by borders.
No.
Yeah, they are impacting everyone, and that's actually one of those things that she emphasized, that even though developed countries contributed less to the climate issues we have now, they are suffering the most consequences because they don't have any technological means, especially to shield themselves from this problem, like forecasting some of this negative impact, like flooding, for example. Yeah, we don't have the technology available. We're still working on the expertise, actually, let alone the technology available to be able to focus that in a way that would enable us to basically, in terms of drought, for example, to move to highlands before it pops up.
Yeah.
We, in other words, as developed countries, we contributed the least, but are suffering the most. That's one. So, for me, she's just pointing to, hinting to, to the fact that if we are going to do something here in terms of investment, we have to do it right, in a sense that, we have to do it, in a transparent way that we all know what we're getting into. And in terms of partnership, we are partnering up in all these investments in a transparent way, more like a team, team membership way, not might is right, like we can see what, with the Trump administration right now, right? If you don't have the military means to defend yourself, then, I'm always right. And, what I say flies. What you say, if I don't like it, I'm not going to take it. So, the partnership, the emphasis on partnership for me, and one that you pointed out, and also the emphasis on policies.
Yeah.
Yeah. That partnership is not going to work very well unless it's built on strong policies. And I think policies, and this is something that that you don't have to be a legal expert to figure out. Policies are the center. Again, one thing, the way that I look at investment, at least in my very non-economic minds, is that investments, the person you're calling investor is a business person. In other words, they have a shareholder interest to protect. So if they will have to swindle you, they will. But it will be up to you to read the terms and conditions and lay the foundation legally for them to operate on. They have to come and, when they come, you're telling them, in this country, in this investment environment, this and this and this you can do, this and this you can't. But if they just pop up and there are no rules, party.
Short on cash? Get to where you save for a bargain combo of 5 for just 170.00 Namibian dollars. 2.5 kilograms Champion Super Maize Meal, 2.5 kilograms Bokomo Fat Cooked Flour, 2 kilos Nice Rice, 2 kilos Marathon White or Brown Sugar, and 1 kilogram Grande Macaroni or Spaghetti. That's all for just 170.00 Namibian dollars. Hurry to your favorite you save. We all say at you save.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. It's a minute past the hour of 5 and past the hour of 6. I want to start over home run. Ah, yeah, David, come and take your show. One thing that she also pointed out that I said I will get back to is the accelerated technology transfer.
Mm.
Now, that one is, I found that somewhat very interesting because it took me back to the, to the arbitration of, of Venezuela and ConocoPhillips, the American oil company.
Mm.
Where they pointed out that, in one of the major investments that ConocoPhillips had to do back in the 90s when Venezuela was opened up for private investment, when they opened up their oil industry for private investment, was that ConocoPhillips, one of the things that they claimed during arbitration was that they invested a lot in, two offshore and one onshore wells that they were exploring.
Yeah,
and one of the major investments were poured into what they called industry leading technology.
Without defining what it is.
No, they didn't define industry leading technology in the oil sector. This can mean anything from the seismic survey expertise and technology involved all the straight up to the physical infrastructure, especially if you're talking about onshore, drilling equipments, for example.
Mm.
So that's one of those things that they actually calculated the value of I think it's safe to say that amounted to the 8-something billion that they are now asking, they have been asking since 2013, Venezuela to pay up. And now their executive branch leader decided, you know what, forget all that. Let's do a shortcut.
Mm.
We are yet to see how that one is going to work out. Experts are pointing to one very flaw in that plan that if you were to take money and start revamping the now dilapidated oil refineries or oil infrastructure in Venezuela, it will take approximately 15 to 20 years and billions of dollars.
Which would still not be within the time frame that had been promised, supposedly, by...
15 to 20 years, homeboy is out of office.
What? 5 years from now, 3 years from now, Helmut, he's out of office.
Out of office.
Yeah.
And then a new guy comes into office. This is one of those unaddressed flaws in democracy because, I totally understand the ExxonMobil is a CEO. He was just saying, dude, you're going to be out of that seat in 5 years. Yeah. In 3 years?
Yeah.
Now, and you can't guarantee us that the guy that's going to sit in that office is going to have our interest. What if they just come
and and is going to pursue the same...
Continue your interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes things tricky, yeah.
Makes things tricksy.
I wanted to add on to the point, Helmut, that you brought up just before we switched over to ending on the oil and Venezuela discussion.
Yeah.
Is the conversation on the laws that we don't have. You mentioned policies, but here's the thing, Helmut. The reason why the investors are coming to us from from other parts of the world is because their laws, their regulations have been put in place. Okay, not regulations. Their acts, their laws have been put in place.
Yeah.
That speaks to them taking money and potentially investing somewhere else.
Yeah.
That specifically speaks to things like the Global Gateway Strategy from the EU. That is an act. That's an EU parliamentary or EU council or EU commission act.
It's their investment blueprint, basically.
Yeah. It's an act. So that means Now it literally puts us on the defense as Namibia. Now Namibia has to make up a policy without bringing in any acts that specifically then speaks to this installation of a sector that we know almost nothing of.
But we will create employment.
But we will create employment.
So I love politicians.
How are you going to do this? How? And then we get invited to sustainability platforms and international renewable energy platforms. And we go promote the same sector where we are promising jobs in.
Yeah.
But we have not updated our acts. We have not updated our laws. We have not updated legislation. We've not, as a minister of energy or minister of trade, we've not brought before the whole National Assembly asking, listen, guys, as Namibians, this thing is happening in this country. Let's debate on the subject. Zero, Helmut.
We'll work this out in 2030. David has us on a chokehold today, so till tomorrow.
We'll end it there. Dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place.
And just to put it out there, guys, next time you find yourself outside, especially outside the country, promoting the country's initiatives, please look at, talk about all of them. Thank you very much.
Yeah.